Thanks for listening to For Crying Out Loud on Podcast One.
Hey, coming up on today's episode, Robin Wozinski is my guest, and we're going to talk a lot about just having kids, having a child on the spectrum. You're going to hear all about that and how to deal with a teacher without being that mom. But first, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Well, ads save hundreds of dollars on car insurance, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Do you want to have extra money in your pocket? I mean, that's the most rewarding to-do you do today. Do you see what I'm saying? Go to geico.com. That's geico.com.
ACS fans, get it on. The NFL playoffs are here, and you know what that means. We're getting closer and closer to that final Sunday of the season. You've heard Adam rant about pass interference, ball spotting, and field goal posts on the podcast. But now's your chance to experience it live. When you sign up for the newsletter at CorollaNewsletter.com, you'll be automatically entered for a chance to win an all-expense-paid trip to Los Angeles to watch the last game of the season in the Car Museum with Adam and friends. That's wings, barbecue, plenty of endless rant, and hey, it's Hollywood, so who knows who'll be there? So get to CorollaNewsletter.com today. You and a friend may be flying out to the city of homeless angels to hear Adam rant live about the spread Sal made him bet on. CorollaNewsletter.com. Sit tight!
Made a decision. I'll face the sunniest side head on.
Everybody, welcome to For Crying Out Loud. This feels weird. Kaylin, this is weird, right?
It is not normal, that's for sure.
I don't think I've ever opened the show, but poor Lynette Carolla is in the hospital as we speak, hopefully not bleeding anymore, but she just had some surgery, which she'll tell you about when she gets back. So she's recovering, and I'm the Lynette today, and guess who's the me?
Who?
Robin Wozinski.
It's me.
Or as Lynette would say, Robin.
Yeah, guess who? Robin.
Robin, why do you think Lynette hates you so much?
It's weird. I mean, I think there's a little jealousy there. And I don't. It's kind of weird to say that on her podcast. But, you know, that probably is what it comes down to.
Yeah, Lynette is a pretty. What do you think, Kaylin?
That's a good word for it. Jealousy. Maybe some fear, maybe one day she might take her spot.
A little vindictive, maybe.
She's a pretty angry person.
Those are all words that would never in a million years describe
Lynette. I know.
Lynette, we love you, Lynette.
Lynette is amazing. And oh my God, she's amazing.
She is so
but
awesome.
I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. You're my friend.
Mm-hmm.
We've been spending a lot of time together.
We have.
We have a lot to talk about, but first, I need to give shout-outs to our people who pay to be shouted out.
Okay,
narcissists.
So
you're going to quiz me this time.
Yeah, you always quiz Lynette, so I'm looking on this, and let's see what you can do.
Okay, well, first of all, there's the OG, Ishan Vajpayee.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Ishan.
Hey, Ishan.
I'm going to try to do all the guys first that I can think of.
Okay.
Ishan is one. Jacob Crowley.
Yep.
He's not growly.
No.
A little bit growly.
Well, he is. He's a little. Yeah.
Okay. Luis Juarez.
Luis Juarez.
Love Luis.
I've always wanted to say that one.
Staple of the Reel It In page.
Mm-hmm.
Great dad. Carrie is so very obnoxious.
Oh, God.
What a bitch.
She needs to back off.
Back the fuck off,
Seriously,
Carrie.
It's too much.
Too much. Too much. there's Amanda Crittenden and Casey, how did I forget her last name? Casey
Come
Howell.
On. Yay!
Those two bitches are getting on my last nerve.
God, who can take them anymore?
There's Randy May. Randy May?
Randy May. Do you know her last name?
I know it, but I'm feeling on the spot. Randy May shoot?
Ames.
Oh, Randy.
I was pantomiming.
Hi, Randy. All right, let me see this piece of paper because I'm taking too long. Angie Saldivar, just talked to her over the weekend. Gabby Fonseca and her gypsy friend, Missy Schaefer. And then, of course, there's Rebecca Lubin. We love Rebecca.
Oh, Rebecca.
Never to be called any other name. She hates that. Oh, and Kelly Brandt, she's a cunt. Just kidding.
That's what I was thinking.
Michelle McKibben. She can take a little ribbon. And then Amy Hunt. She is a very nice person. And Aaron Landis. Aaron Land, who dis?
Who dis? New phone, who dis?
New phone, who dis? All right, that's it. Hi, guys.
Yay. They're all awesome.
All right, so, you know, I had a good Christmas. Yep. Leading up to this week's podcast, Lynette and I were having to fake that it was after Christmas.
I know. That was kind of funny. And yeah. I kept thinking, like, well, when was this? Because I obviously had talked to you in between, and I kept waiting to hear stories, but they hadn't actually happened yet. So
right. It
gets a little bit confusing.
Because oftentimes I tell you stuff, and then I go, should I say this on the podcast?
Yeah.
Is this even
– Everything. Everything, right?
I mean, I do. You, as you know, I'll tell you a story and then I have to retell it on the podcast. And sometimes stuff has to sound more dramatic than.
Maybe. Maybe you embellish a little bit. But
are you calling me a liar?
Maybe. Pathological.
So I told the audience on the Reel It In page that you were going to be my guest.
Mm-hmm.
And people had a lot of questions for you. Well, first of all, I was just going to say I had a great Christmas. It was really fun. How was your Christmas?
Ours was awesome. Very low-key, but nice. And my family is super mellow, so we had fun. And then I just celebrated my 25th wedding anniversary. So
that was
really nice. We went, spent the night at the Langham and just kind of lived in the lap of luxury for 24 hours.
Now, that sounds really fun. But after 25 years...
Mm-hmm. Is there any spark left?
Yeah, Robin? I mean, you know, did you feel – this was my question that I didn't ask you actually over the phone.
Okay.
And I know Wade will be listening, but I don't care.
No, I've warned him. It's like, I know you're going to listen and I'm probably going to talk some shit about you. So just be warned. He's like, that's fine.
Okay. So did you feel like – which – because I know I would feel this way. Knowing that you're going away to a hotel, mm-hmm. I can't imagine that you're like – yes, I can't wait to have sex. Because, you know, you're married for a long time. You can have it anytime you want.
Right.
So did you feel like a little bit of extra pressure? Like, okay, for sure, we're going to be getting down.
Yeah. Not pressure, but it is kind of weird when you actually know it's going to be happening.
Yeah.
But he set the stage just – it was really lovely. And I usually don't use – when I call something special, I'm usually being sarcastic. But it was actually really special because I told you about when we first got to the hotel room, he hands me this letter that he's written. And I thought, oh, shit, I didn't – I posted on Facebook. Like, that's
– like normal people.
Hello. And inside of the letter drops out this little – plastic pouch that he's kept two letters from me that I wrote to him when we first started dating that have been in his wallet for 25 years.
And did you have any idea?
I knew he kept those letters and aww. We would occasionally read them together and they were just, I mean, they were so raw and just, we were so in love.
Mm-hmm.
And so his letter to me about that was that he thought after 25 years, he would have to pull those out to remind himself what he loved about me or what we loved about each other or to get back to a place because we were angry or fighting. And I just wept reading this letter because he was really saying he's never had to do that. And it's been this 25 years where, you know, it ebbs and flows and that does in any relationship, but the connection is always there. And it was just... it was such a great way to start our night that, I mean, like, I actually wanted to have sex.
Aww, really?
Yeah. Can you believe it? So
that's so sweet.
It was. It was awesome.
I think every couple needs that, right? You need, like, to get away.
you need to get away. And it's more fun going out and going to the movies. And we went shopping and we drank. And not going home makes it a treat.
Right.
You know?
So right.
It was great. So reconnect. That's my recommendation.
And sometimes I think that people put this pressure on themselves to have date night, and then they're disappointed when date night doesn't work. But mm-hmm. oftentimes it's difficult, I think, to really let go of your life. Just, you know, okay, you ran out to a movie and had some sushi, but you were paying the babysitter. Well, yes. You know, especially people with younger kids, you're like, okay, you know, yes, the babysitter's there, but they're waiting to go home. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you might get a text from them like, hey, how late are you guys going to be? Or, you know.
Yeah, there's like that extra pressure. And I mean, we obviously didn't have that because our kid is 17 now.
Right.
And he's pretty self-sufficient. But what we've started doing, because we don't have a kid that we have to get a babysitter for.
Right.
But we're both kind of realizing, like, he's not going to be around much longer. He goes to college next year. And that's where all your focus is. So we've realized we need to figure out how to be with each other again. And silly things like, now we run errands together, like things we used to do separately. He'll be like, do you want to go to Costco with me? I'm like, yeah. And we spend 2 hours. Yeah. Isn't that bizarre? And
yeah.
It's actually kind of fun. I got a hot dog at Costco. And I got $1.50 lunch on Saturday.
But did you get sex trafficked?
Well, barely.
Well, next time go to IKEA.
I wasn't at Target, Stephanie. I said Costco.
Well, I think that's nice, although I think it's a little weird to spend that much time together.
It's not that much time. It's...
Well, because he works full-time
out of
the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I can totally see that. You know what I was just thinking when you were saying this is that... Isn't it funny that every stage of having kids is a stage where that's hard on marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Really, they should just say having kids is hard. Because they say a lot of couples break up in the first year,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you start getting in fights. Right, Kaylin? You with me on this?
Yeah, I've heard that before.
it's hard that first year.
Now, Kaylin, your situation having a baby is different than
a lot
of people's situations.
Correct.
But you can get very into, you know, women can get extremely overwhelmed with the breastfeeding and, you know, the incredible responsibility that comes with being a new parent, especially your first one. But then when you add another one in, then that creates double the pressure. You two wouldn't know about that right now, but
yeah,
I mean, Robin,
I'm pregnant, but it's a big announcement. Yeah. Not really. I'm 54.
So
calm down.
I guess there is sort of a, I don't know if it's a honeymoon period, but I guess when your kids are young. But then when your kids get older and then you've been putting all your attention into your kids and then your kid leaves, I think a lot of people go, oh, well, I don't have anything to talk to this asshole about.
Exactly. It's true, though. I mean, that's what I always get kind of scared of, because I saw my parents went through that, you know, where I think they struggled when all of us became adults.
Mm-hmm.
But then really chose to reconnect, and like they almost had to recreate their life together because they had 4 kids and we were
right.
all close together. And I don't know, it's you just do it.
Yeah. I think sometimes that, you know, the having a baby, you and I talked about this the other day, having a baby is so hard that you think, like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. I want the baby phase for me. I know some people love having a baby. No shade. I mean, you're weird. But I wanted that part to be over. I wanted to have a child.
Right.
I liked being a mother, but I wanted I didn't like the incredible 24/7, I have a barnacle attached to me, responsibility.
So hard.
But now that that's passed and now my twins are 12 and Elby's 15, of course, there's a part of me, I don't wish back the baby phase, but I wish there was more time in front of me.
Yes, I can understand that. But there is nothing I miss about the baby phase.
No.
No. It was exceptionally hard, though. And I mean, so many people asked about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, well, how did I know something
so
was going on with
So your son Jack is 17 mm-hmm. now, and he has autism.
He has autism, and he was diagnosed at 20 months, so he was little.
So take us back to the – it was different. You told me that it was different from the start.
from the very beginning. I would say, like, I started having legitimate concerns when he was like 6 weeks old.
6 weeks?
Uh-huh. Because he wouldn't look at me. He would actively turn his head away from me. And every milestone was missed. Like, he didn't smile. He didn't point. He didn't. He was almost like hypnotized. You know, if we went on a walk, he would just stare straight ahead when he was in the stroller. And I used to call him my faraway boy, because that's what he would always just sort of be looking away and not at anything. And aside from that, in I would say the first 8 months, if he wasn't eating or sleeping, he was crying. And he was so unhappy. And I remember noticing that when he would wake up from a nap, he would be happy. Like, he, the only pictures I have of him smiling as a baby were because I waited for him to wake up to take a picture. And this was pre-cell phone, so like I had to be ready with a real camera. And then within 2 minutes, his little body would start squirming and he'd start crying. And I realize now the world would just overwhelm him, the sound and the light. And it was too much for him because he couldn't filter it out. So at 18 months.
So wait, but when – so when he was really young, did you feel – like, maybe it's me. Maybe I just don't have experience. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just being paranoid. Like, did people around you, when you would express concerns, like, to Wade, would people be like, I'm sure he's fine?
Yes, they would try to reassure me. But I knew that I – because I'm just not a neurotic person. And so I knew I was seeing stuff, but every –
Did you bring it up to the pediatrician?
I did. And I would never use the word autism, but I would always tell him what I saw was going on. And
right.
It actually really pisses me off when I think back on it, because he would say things like, oh, you know, boys are aloof. And that's how my oldest son was. And there were really
– And this is a doctor?
This is a pediatrician. Ugh. Yeah. And so – By, and I would Google all the time, and I had like these little rules for myself. So I would sit down and I would never type in the word autism. Like, that was my rule. But I would type in what I saw going on, like no eye contact, doesn't smile, no words. And then, of course, the search results would be autism, autism, autism.
Mm-hmm.
And so at 18 months, I told Wade, you know, I want you to go to the next appointment with me because I'm going to get a referral. And I want you to be there with me. And he was like, at that point, he knew something was going on too. So he didn't fight me at all. He was just like, okay. And he had been saying, like, I think you worry too much. You know, he's just a baby. And, you know, within days of getting the referral and having the appointment, he was diagnosed. So it was really, really obvious.
Wait, so you got the referral and the appointment, and then you went on the appointment.
Yeah, so the appointment involved an interview with us, and then the doctor observed Jack. And he had no language, so there was, like, no speech assessment. But I remember in the interview, it was so weird. Like, Wade was still kind of in denial, I guess, even though we didn't have a diagnosis yet. But she would say things like, does he ever ask for milk? And I'd say no. And Wade would have to back it up with, well, we haven't taught him to. We didn't teach him to ask for milk. And I
But he wasn't talking.
Oh, he wasn't talking. But also, I'm like, you don't have to teach somebody how to ask for something. That's
right.
Acquired. Language is acquired. You know, you're not giving babies language lessons.
Right.
So he would sort of try to explain away everything the pediatrician would ask about. And I just sat there thinking, God, I'm the only one who knows what's happening, you know? And I just, it was like this dread waiting for it, but it was a relief.
And did it happen that day?
No, of course not. You have to wait and suffer. It was probably a week later.
They called you back in?
You go back for another appointment and sit there and wait while they like read through all these reports. And I'm just like, just tell me. And of course, then she tells us he has autism and I cried.
So
and,
how did she say it?
God.
I mean, did you already feel that was coming from everything she was saying in the report?
Yes.
Like, Were they like, okay, so we noticed that this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like talking about the difference.
Were there like criteria that had to be checked off? Were they like, and then we noticed this and this fits into, or?
I just don't remember that.
Right.
That day is kind of a blur. And I think she got to the diagnosis pretty quick because she knows you're sitting there with your stomach in knots.
Mm-hmm.
She just said, we are, you know, quite certain that Jack has autism. And I say, okay. And the first question I asked her was, can you tell me why? And, you know, why does he, how did he get this? And, well, no, we don't know. I said, is it something I did?
Mm.
And that's my first, And of course, she was able to say, no, this is a neurological disorder. And so that was, it was, because you asked, like, did I think it was in my mothering or with him? But ultimately, I guess I did. And I needed to hear that it wasn't my fault that this was happening. And I remember on the drive home, because it happened in Pasadena, our doctor was in Pasadena, and we're driving back to the Valley, and Wade said, you know, you need to remember that we're going home to the same kid that we left 2 hours ago.
Right.
Like the only thing that's changed is information. And now we can get help, which is true. It was like liberating in a way because I had so many little secrets and lies and tricks and excuses for what was happening. So it was a
relief. I have this question about autism. So there are, I mean, obviously there's a spectrum, but is there any way that they can tell you at the beginning, like, we think he's going to be able to do that, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to have language. It's just going to be late. Like, because I know some people who have children with autism that never speak and never can ever be on their own. I mean, did you have that fear? Like, what?
Of course. Yeah.
Is my kid going to be nonverbal, not potty trained at, you know, 18?
Yeah. And I mean, there's no way to tell. And because he had no language when he got diagnosed, of course, that was my biggest fear. Will he ever talk? And it's the scariest part of it is the uncertainty.
Right.
Because you have no idea where it's going and what's going to happen. And so I always, you know, because at the time he was diagnosed, everyone was talking about the diet, you know, gluten-free, casein-free, and that's the first thing I wanted to try. And our doctor said, you know what, let's introduce one variable at a time. She said, start with therapy, and then if you aren't satisfied with the progress, then introduce the diet. You know, like, do it scientifically.
Right.
So if you're seeing progress, at least you know what to attribute it to.
Okay. I bet you the doctors see a lot of people that are just like, throw everything.
All you want to do is try stuff.
Right.
And she was a big floor time advocate, which is a play-based therapy. And Jack was so little, that's all. It made so much sense. So we always did floor time and speech and OT and physical therapy and feeding therapy. I mean, we had every therapy under the sun.
So, you know, speaking as someone who had a kid who had full-time, 7 days a week, you know, therapy, it's a lot.
It is.
On your stress.
It is, but at the same time, it was a place to go. You know, with this kid that I really didn't know how to make happy, it was actually a relief to be able to go to therapy.
Right.
Because there was someone to help me. And
so tell me about the first bit of progress you saw.
It was in OT, in occupational therapy. He really liked the little swing. I still remember Brianna was our physical or occupational therapist. She was amazing. And so every time she'd pull him up in the swing and say, ready, set, go. And probably, I don't know how many weeks it was into it, but she would pull the swing up and say, ready. And Jack would say, set. And set was his first word.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And it was so,
and were you there when it happened?
Not the first time, but she called me in to show me.
They videotaped it?
No, but just she had him do it again, you know.
Did you cry?
Of course. Oh, my God, yes. I wept.
Did you know as soon as he said a word, were you like, okay, then he's going to talk? No. Because aren't kids who have – I'm showing my ignorance right now. I don't know that much about it. So kids that are nonverbal, are they truly nonverbal, or are there kids that have a couple words but they just not talking?
Yeah, I mean the communication can look really different. Some kids are verbal but they're always scripting, meaning they're repeating something they've heard or seen. Or kids who have utterances. So they're asking for things but maybe in one or two words and there's not a back and forth. Some kids become conversational. It's such a crapshoot. You just don't know. And some kids have apraxia where it's physically the brain isn't communicating with the muscles of the mouth to form words. And you just don't know until you start therapy and start walking through the process.
Okay, so what was your therapy called? I've heard of this ABA. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
We didn't do ABA.
Okay, so what is ABA?
ABA is Applied Behavioral Analysis.
Okay, what does that
mean? And it basically means...
Tell me everything, Robin.
Okay, let me just dig in. It's sort of regimented where they're teaching one skill at a time. And maybe they're teaching a kid the colors. And so if they're learning the colors, they're sitting across from the therapist. And if you say point to orange and the kid points to orange, they get some sort of reward. It's sort of a token economy and a reward system. So they're getting some sort of feedback for learning the skills. And
it's like training a pet.
A little bit. I mean, because that works,
right?
You know, positive reinforcement works.
Right.
Jack, I felt, was too young for that because he wasn't even two when he got diagnosed. And floor time is based on the notion that to attain cognitive skills, you have to reach emotional milestones. So it's about connecting. And once a kid can connect, then they sort of see the value in communicating. And it made more sense for Jack, but it kind of depends on, first of all, what's being offered to you as services.
Right.
Although anybody in California with a young kid, you don't have to do ABA. They'll tell you that's what you have to do, but you can find clinics that still do floor time.
So that's what your therapy was called, floor time.
Floor time.
And it didn't have to transition into ABA?
No.
You could do floor time and that could just...
Yeah.
What's it called then when your kid gets a little older and isn't like playing on the floor?
Oh, God, that's such a good question because there is a word for it and I can't remember what it is because it does transition into something kind of different.
But Jack got – I don't want to use the word got better, but he started
– He made – once he started
a lot
making
of progress,
he made it quickly and his language really developed.
Did he go to normal preschool?
He went to a special ed preschool.
Okay.
He went to, they called it a preschool mix. So it was mixed disabilities. And I really fought that in the beginning until I realized I wanted him to go to a regular preschool for me and not for him. It's, you have to check like your ego at the door because you have all these visions of what you thought having a kid was going to be like. And then it's you have to reevaluate because we visited preschools and there was one that was mostly typical kids and then five kids with IEPs. And I thought, well, that's what I want him to go to. And then we visited and it's like, oh, he would be lost in here. He could not be among 25 kids and get what he needs.
Right, right.
And then we visited the preschool mix and there were like, 7 or 8 kids. And when we walked in, they were all sitting around a kidney table, you know, like the half circle table.
Yeah.
They're drinking apple juice out of Dixie cups. And I stood there thinking, oh my God, Jack will never do that. The idea of him sitting somewhere, for one, and drinking out of an open cup, it's like, are you fucking insane? It's like, it's not going to happen. And of course, within a week of being in that class, it was happening.
Wow.
And it's just even – it's so funny because I'm a teacher, so I know stuff happens at school that doesn't get learned at home.
Right.
But it still surprised me every time he came home with a new skill. And, yeah.
So then it just kept progressing.
It did.
I remember, just to identify with you, that when Sadie was really little and she was not hitting milestones and she was behind Xander, I just remember – that with that comparing it that with LB, there was so much competition among moms of just like I remember feeling like, what, other kids are walking and LB's not walking yet. When's LB going to walk? And just getting caught up in that. And by the time I had Sadie, who was not doing anything at any time close to when and having all this therapy, I remember just getting so mad at the whole concept of competing and whose kid is doing what when. And I remember thinking, this has nothing to do with parenting.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and I want to get off of this carousel and just live my life with my kid. And then I remember just having smart ass responses when people would ask if, you know, I think I talked about this, where people would say like, oh, is she walking? And I would say, no, but she reads at a second grade level. Did I ever tell that on the podcast? And people
composing.
Would go, what? Because that's how people are. They really believe they can't take any kind of dry humor or sarcasm.
Yeah. That's a hard carousel to hop off of, though.
Your kid is reading?
Oh, wait. Hold on.
What? Where are you doing Kumon? What? Yeah.
Suzuki method?
She's 17 months. We're doing Kumon. Suzuki. Yeah. But I mean, I know it's an adjustment to just go, my kid is unique and on their own path. And I have to like celebrate that.
It's really hard to get to that, though. I mean, you have to surround yourself with people who are there with you. And I don't even mean other autism moms, but friends who don't give a shit what milestones your kid is meeting.
Right.
Just because one of the moms on the page said, like, I'm a single mom. I have two kids on the spectrum. What do I do? And I mean, my first piece of advice is to find people you can just hang out with your kids, who aren't going to judge your kids, who aren't going to care if you have to leave early. I mean, I can't tell you how many places I had to leave because Jack was tantruming or just not wasn't jiving with what was going on. And you have to find those people. Like if your kid's in therapy, go wait in the waiting room and meet moms in the waiting room and make connections that was my survival, was finding other moms and also old friends who had kids at the same time who just accepted who Jack was.
And I also want to talk about the autism moms after. Let's hear a word from our sponsors first.
Ooh.
I know you're going to get to do this.
I know.
With me. You know what I want to talk about first is ButcherBox. I'm going to tell you why. ButcherBox is a subscription box of all kinds of meat and chicken and beef and bacon. And I got one of these boxes. And I just want to say that you get high quality meat and it's very inexpensive for what you get. So I have a freezer in my garage. So I got my butcher box and I put all my stuff into the freezer. And I have been making meals on a regular basis and I'm still not out of the stuff that I got. And it's mixed. It's all organic. There was the free range chicken. I mean, it's healthy meat, lean. And I made one night I made chicken breast and it was a lot of chicken breast. Like we're a family of five.
Mm-hmm.
I got a huge meal out of it plus leftovers. Then I made salmon. Then I just made chicken thighs in a stir fry. I still have steaks. I mean, and every single meal, like everybody loved it.
I need to get this because I love cooking, but it's having stuff on hand. Like that's my biggest like failure in cooking. It's like, oh, I don't want to go to the store.
So you go to your garage, take your meat out, let it thaw, and then you make something. Just like I just brought out literally in my house right now is the ground beef. It's lean ground beef, and I'm going to have the kids turn that into hamburger patties.
Nice.
And yeah, that's what we'll make tonight.
I love it.
So every month, ButcherBox ships a curated selection of high quality meat right to your house. It's all free of antibiotics or added hormones. Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individual meals. It's packed fresh. It's shipped frozen and vacuum sealed, so it stays that way. And like I said, it's really great. I like the options like the 100% grass-fed and finished beef, the free-range organic chicken, like I said, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, nitrate-free bacon. It's like how it should be.
Yeah.
And right now, you can get 2 pounds of salmon absolutely free, plus $20 off your first box if you just go to butcherbox.com/FCOL and use the promo code FCOL at checkout. That's butcherbox.com/FCOL or use promo code FCOL at checkout. Also, Tommy John.
Tommy John, I'm not kidding. I am wearing a Tommy John camisole right now.
Are you really?
Let me see.
Let me see. Oh, you sure are.
I love that I actually showed you.
I always show Lynette my third love bra.
I always wondered if you're actually showing her. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I love my white. I have a white one, the camisole, Tommy John.
I have white and black.
They're so cute. They're so comfortable. And I like their on the page to read. They say, simply put, Tommy John doesn't give an F. They give three Fs, fabric, fit, and function. And it's so true.
I love that.
I got John some Tommy John for Christmas. He was super excited because that's his favorite underwear.
Oh,
the boxer.
Okay.
They're so soft. Wade would love them.
I would say I should have had those at the hotel. That would have
been
a good anniversary.
If he's going to make you wear lingerie,
I know.
Make him wear really soft boxers. Caitlin, you love Tommy John.
Oh yeah, Tommy John's been a sponsor for a while, so I've been getting some product for quite a while now, and I'm actually totally ruined. I can't wear any other boxers. they're that comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. I have to wear only Tommy John's.
Yeah, and I sleep in John's Tommy John t-shirts too. So here's what you're going to do. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/FCOL for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/FCOL for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/FCOL and see what all the fuss is about. Okay.
Okay, so, that I have to say I'm so excited that I was here for a commercial read.
It's fun, right?
I don't know why that's so exciting, but it is.
So I was so interested in your story about because you would think you think when something's going on with your kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like let's say Sadie was small for gestational age. So you think I'm going to hook up in a Facebook group with other parents who have kids who are small for gestational age. But you realize within any group, not everybody's normal.
Oh,
like there's crazy factions of everything that's going on with kids.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. That actually is a really interesting point you bring up. First of all, when Jack was diagnosed, it was before social media. It didn't exist yet. So you couldn't connect in that way.
Uh-huh.
But my neighbor, I remember right after he was diagnosed, gave me this pamphlet for a conference to go to. I'm like, yes, okay, I get to meet other parents. And
you're thinking it's going to be an oasis in the desert of what I've been dealing with.
An ocean of support. So I go, and it was, I didn't know anything about that they're kind of different factions in the autism world.
Yeah, tell us what those are.
Okay, so the one I'm thinking of is a lot of people take a real biomedical approach. And that's what this conference ended up being. So that's a lot of interventions. I'm trying to think of one of the more extreme things that people do.
So tell me what happens.
Okay. So I go to this conference and we're at lunch and I don't know anybody. I went by myself. And so I sort of invited.
So was your neighbor, did she have a kid with autism?
No, not at all. I think she must have gotten it randomly in the mail or something.
Okay. And she was like, oh, Robin.
Exactly.
Okay.
Like, Robin would be interested in this. And
she's like, my kid's totally normal, but you might like this.
I have three typical kids, but this might help your child.
So, that's how I would take everything, just the wrong way.
Would you?
I'd be like, oh, is the reason why you didn't come and ask me to buy a candy bar because my kid has autism?
Yeah. Wow. I felt that. That's personal. Yeah, I chose to take everything personally.
Right,
it was
right.
Really healthy. So I sit down at lunch with this group of parents and And I don't want to offend anybody that's listening that does biomedical.
Well, people will get offended no matter what.
Okay, okay.
It doesn't matter.
So fuck y'all. just to preface, before I sat down for lunch, one of the breakout sessions I went to, the whole thing was about Epsom salt baths.
Okay.
And to give them every night. To leach out the toxins.
I'm smiling because I know this story and I can't wait. It's so good.
And
so good.
And I mean, I'm taking mad manic notes. Like, oh my God. Okay. All right. I can do that. I can do an Epsom salt bath. And
is the Epsom salt bath for you or for the kid?
For the child. Yes.
You take one after to relax.
Thank you for clarifying that, Stephanie. Yeah, so
they're like, the reason your kid has autism is because you need to relax.
You need to chill. They're just picking up on your stress. I am actually thinking, though, now that I'm talking about this, I should start like Epsom salt bath bombs.
Ooh.
Maybe that. Okay. Take a note.
Yeah.
All right. So.
And market them to the autism crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. I can set up a vendor table.
We're always thinking.
Oh, we are.
Always trying to monetize.
We're scrappy.
Monetize that autism.
Monetism. Okay, so I go to lunch.
Right.
And it's at the hotel, and I sit down with a big table of other parents. And they were all.
So far, you're not tipped off to. You're like, okay, Epsom, I'm getting some valuable information, or are you at all thinking like.
A little of both. Like, I'm getting information I'm willing to try, but kind of getting the vibe that, like, I don't think this is my jam, you know?
Okay. But you're not sure why yet.
Yeah. Okay. But it's kind of stirring. I mean, you're exploring all options when your kid is first diagnosed.
Right.
And so I sit down at lunch and all the parents are talking about vaccines and that their child got autism from the vaccines. And I'm not even saying that doesn't happen.
Right.
I know kids who have vaccine injuries.
Yeah.
And but I'm really not a part of that camp. And I said to them, you know, I actually know that my child didn't get it from the vaccines because I knew he had autism before he even got vaccines. I was seeing signs at a very early age.
Right.
And I kind of announced this to this table of like 12 people.
Not knowing.
And they all, I mean, it's like a movie. They sort of all turned and stared at me like confusedly. And one of the dads says, do you have a lot of amalgams? And I'm like, a lot of what? And he goes, fillings. Do you have a lot of fillings? And it just hit me. Holy fuck. He's blaming the mercury in my fillings for my kid having autism. And I, okay, I need to find a different conference to go to. So that was just sort of my first introduction to like,
But I love your response to it, too. You didn't even just go, I need to go. You were like,
No. Of course.
You're like, I mean, yeah, I do.
I know. I'm
like, thanks.
No, I do. I have a lot of them, but I guess I've never considered that. That's really interesting. I mean, and inside I'm just thinking, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, so it was – there are tribes within tribes and you have to find and not that everybody has to think exactly the same way, but I needed to find my group of moms who had a sense of humor about their kids and got frustrated with their kids and were honest about being frustrated with autism and not saying things like autism is a gift. I've never said that. You know, it's autism is hard and autism looks different for every family, but it's never easy. And I like parents being able to acknowledge that it's not easy. And I love this kid and I'm doing everything I can for this kid, but it's not what I pictured. And I don't think there's any shame in admitting that this isn't what I pictured, and this is going to be really different than I thought it would be. And I sort of had that epiphany driving home from the diagnosis and thinking, these cards like falling into place in my brain, like, oh, I need to restage what I thought this was going to be like and what my priorities are. Because everything I wanted for Jack was because I wanted it. And I thought, oh, I actually just really want him to be happy and to be kind. Like, those became my two priorities. And we're still on the fence with the kind part. That's still in limbo.
He's pretty kind.
He is. I mean, he's sweet. Luckily, he's sweet out in the world. If he's ever not, it's with me and his dad.
So tell me about some of the challenges, though. Like, then moving forward, he mainstreamed mm-hmm. by elementary school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that must have felt really good.
It did. Yeah, by kindergarten, he had a full-time aide in kindergarten.
Oh, he did.
He
okay.
did. But his kindergarten teacher, who was, I mean, a fucking saint, she was incredible. Can I say her name?
Sure. Why not?
Her name was Brooke Wilkerson, and she was a savior for me and just got Jack. And so she's the one who suggested maybe weaning off the full-time aide, which I didn't want to do because if you let it go, you never get it back.
Mm-hmm.
But by Christmas, he was without an aide.
At all.
At all. Yeah. And she just understood how to kind of make him do what he was supposed to do, even though he was very resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say up until, and I tell my parents this all the time, my parents of my students,
mm-hmm.
And not even necessarily kids with autism, that up until third grade, every day picking him up from school, I would have a knot in my stomach because I would have no idea what I was going to hear about. Like, what did he do? What's going on?
Well, like, was he doing? Was he getting in trouble?
Yeah. I mean, he was always everything from not focusing to, you know, just like playing the wrong game on the playground, or because he would always play Star Wars. And if somebody didn't play it the way he wanted to play it, then he would get mad at them. And, you know, and it was all very typical for autism kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. teachers didn't always know how to manage it.
Right.
I remember in first grade, oh my God, this is my most angering story. The principal at his school, I had come to volunteer for something, and she kind of corners me and says, you know, I've been observing in Jack's classroom, and he's really having a problem focusing. And
God, I think everybody listening to this can relate.
Seems really distracted and not really engaged in the learning. And I looked at her and I said, you know he has autism, right? It's like you basically just read the IEP to me. Like, why are you reporting this to
right,
me?
Right, right, right.
And it was the most bizarre.
Were you like, should I get him tested, do you think?
You know, maybe I should get him evaluated. That's, wow, that's valuable information. Thank you. And that was his first grade teacher was such a hot mess. And okay,
I'm going to say her name too.
No, but I am going to talk trash about this particular teacher because she was so unorganized.
First of all, I just want to say in my own defense, when everybody goes crazy when Lynette and I say anything bad about a teacher, now I'm sitting with a teacher who's talking shit about teachers. Okay, well, so it's okay. It's a case by case situation
for sure.
In general, we're not saying that teachers suck. We're saying some teachers are amazing. And yes, some certain teachers can make your life harder.
Yeah.
That's just normal. That's just life.
Yes. And so it was just this very unorganized classroom. I would volunteer in there all the time. And the way she spoke to the kids when I was there was unbelievable. And this was back – I'm still teaching halftime. A lot of people asked, how do you balance it? It's like, well, I job share. So that's how I'm sitting here because I don't work on Mondays and Tuesdays. But anyway, I remember her telling me that these kids don't pay attention. They're always talking. And, then she was telling me, oh, my God, next week I'm supposed to teach borrowing in math. I hate teaching that. I said, oh, I love teaching math. I said, do you want me to do a lesson? She's like, sure. And so I created this whole very engaging lesson where the kids were coming up and
But you were a teacher at that time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes, I was a classroom teacher, and first grade was like totally in my wheelhouse.
Right. Okay.
And
so it wasn't just like you were some random mom.
No.
I love to teach borrowing.
Oh, my God. That's my hobby.
I've never done it, but I have some good ideas.
Do you mind if I come and workshop it with your kids?
Right. You were an actual teacher.
Yeah. And I'd been teaching for a long time. And it was just so fun because she complained about what a horrible class they were behaviorally.
Right, right.
And you could have heard a pin drop when I taught a lesson in that class. And I came in the whole week and taught math.
Uh-huh.
Like, when is she coming back? And it's like, I don't know what she was doing, but clearly she didn't enjoy what she was doing.
Right.
And you kind of have to like what you're doing to pass that on to the kids.
Yeah.
Why are they going to enjoy it if you
don't?
And
Robin, by the way, the kids, especially in elementary school, when we're seeing like when we're having problems with our kids in a certain year, they're with the same teacher all day. So if you suck, you think and the kids are with you 7 hours out of their day and they're young kids, like you're basically parenting them. And if you suck at it and you're not enjoying it, they feel that.
I know.
And then you're going to have behavior issues in your classroom.
Well, and there was one time when Jack got in trouble, and the next day was the Halloween carnival. And so I'm picking him up from school, and this is in front of me. She bends over and gets in his face and says, if I had anything to say about it, you wouldn't be allowed to go to the carnival tomorrow. And I retell that story and people say, oh my God, what did you do? And the advocate tiger mom in me did nothing. I was frozen. I was in such shock. And if I had opened my mouth, I would have started crying. And this is how she's treating him in front of me. What does she do when I'm not there? And so it was just sort of this. I realized I had to rehearse things to say if I'm ever put in that situation again. Because when you're caught off guard in any kind of situation like that, you better have something in your back pocket to react to it or respond to it. It was so sad. Luckily, Jack loved her. He thought she was great.
I know. Isn't that so interesting?
Yeah.
But then sometimes kids can tell when the teacher, you know, sometimes a teacher, other people might experience a teacher as being a great teacher, but they just don't have a personality match with your kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then it makes you feel even worse because you're like, but there's nothing wrong with my kid. But this teacher just doesn't love my kid.
Right.
And my kid can feel it. And then it ruins their experience.
Well, and that's something I really have figured out as a teacher is really finding things to love about every kid. And because if a kid has behaviors in any way, they're asking for something. Like a behavior isn't there for no reason. They either need attention or want more attention. And we're always resistant to giving it when kids act out.
Right.
But it's like, just give it. You know, it's.
But are there some kids who are just assholes?
Ultimately, no, there aren't actually. There's always a reason for it. I may not always know the reason, but I can figure out how to a kid gets stuck in this role of being the bad kid in a classroom, and that's the teacher's responsibility to take away. And the way you do that is by recognizing when they are doing something right, giving them a job to be a helper, you know. And obviously I teach kindergarten. It probably gets more challenging as kids get older, but I also, when I have a kid with a lot of behaviors, I actually have a deal with them where we have signals. Like if we need a break, I put up a 3 and he knows to go take a break at table 3. Because if I keep saying their name over and over and over again, they just become the name that's constantly being redirected or reprimanded corrected. And I don't want that label to be on a kid.
Okay, so before we wrap, I have a couple of questions. I think parents have a couple of questions about as a parent, what makes you like that mom? Because – and decode for us, like when you have to talk to a mom about a kid's behavior, when should a mom read behind the lines of like your kid – like go get your kid evaluated. They're really – something's really off. And when – are you just like, just FYI, your kid didn't have a great day today? Do you know what I mean? Like, what things do you say that we as parents should be like, I need to take this seriously and not just get defensive and be like, ah, you don't like my kid.
Right. I think it would be.
And if that's a convoluted question, you can change it in your head and say whatever you want.
Yeah, I get it. I think if I'm really concerned about a kid, one of the things I will really point out to a parent is that this is unusual behavior. This is not something I will normally see in kindergartners. And it's just kind of a diplomatic way of explaining, like, this is something that we need to look at further. And I'm not just reporting to you because they had a bad day.
Okay.
That this is unusual.
And do parents normally say, like, oh my gosh, thank you for telling me? Or do they go, wow,
I don't
need to hear that. My kid's fine. I don't notice that at home at all.
Well, it's interesting.
Or is it a mix?
I think I've never had that reaction from a parent, but I have to toot my own horn here. But I'm really professional and really diplomatic and really friendly with parents because I know how hard it is to hear hard things about your kid. So I really make a point of letting them know that we are in this together. So I really telling you so you can help me at school and that we can communicate and help each other, you know, because a lot of times I'm with their kid more than they are. And if they have any advice for me, I want to hear it. If I have a kid who I really think needs to be evaluated, then that involves a phone call. And it involves some really hard conversations sometimes, but they have to be sort of cloaked because you're not allowed to say, I think your kid's on the spectrum.
Right.
But you kind of tell them, usually when I call a parent with concerns of that nature, they've been waiting for my phone call. They know something's up. And I had a couple years ago, a mom just burst into tears on the phone. And she said, I'm so glad you're saying this because I've been worried for 2 years and my family tells me I'm crazy. So, and it really helps that I'm the mom of a kid on the spectrum.
Right.
So
remember when Xander was in the first grade? And then I had the teacher tell me, like, oh, Xander's really fidgety and, you know, he doesn't want to sit still. And he, like, puts his leg. He won't sit up. He'll, like, lay down sometimes. and then I said, oh, maybe he's bored. And I know that's a teacher's worst nightmare, right? But then it turned out to be bored. But then she really did tell me I should have him evaluated by the pediatrician. Remember I started Googling like crazy, like ADD. And then people were like, it could just be the ADD, like the attention type. Because I was like, he's not hyper. He's not really forgetful at home. I mean, he's a little distracted. And then she created Book Club and had the kids at a higher reading level read a book. And then she was like, oh, problem solved.
Right.
And I was like, so he was bored.
Yeah.
So do you ever see that where?
Yeah. Well, I will rarely.
Or was I being that mom by even suggesting? I didn't say it. You know me. I wasn't like, maybe he's bored. He's super, super bright.
He's so gifted.
Yeah. I said, I know this is probably one of those things that people say, but is it possible he's just, his mind is wandering because he's not challenged?
Yeah. Well, and honestly, if a parent ever said it in that way, it would be a good conversation. Yeah. In kindergarten, I'm rarely reporting to a parent that their kid is fidgety because they're five.
Right.
And it would be kind of weird if they weren't.
Right. Well, Xander was six.
Yeah.
Maybe just barely seven.
Exactly. And you give lots of opportunities for kids to move and to switch. But I had one kid who He was pretty defiant, and he was very bright. And so when a kid is that bright, we really do accommodate and make modifications to the kindergarten curriculum. Mm-hmm. But his mom said to me, well, I think he's bored. And this is the first time I've ever did this. I looked at her and I said, what do you do when you're bored? I was basically saying to her, okay, maybe he is bored, but this still is not an appropriate way to respond to being bored.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, that is the teacher's worst nightmare to hear.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this has been very informative, and I loved having you here. And I know for a fact I can tell you that everybody loved –
Well, let's hope so.
Your input.
Okay.
And
just be kind.
Before we wrap, I want to thank our sponsors, Geico.com, TommyJohn.com/FCOL, ButcherBox.com/FCOL, or enter FCOL. And why don't you join Patreon? This week, Elby is going to be my guest on Patreon. She's going to give you all the insight to being a teenager. I'm going to ask her if That's a Bop is still a thing.
Oh, I hope not.
And she's going to give you an update on her anxiety and how that goes in her life. People asked for that. Robin, where can we find you? Don't friend Robin on Facebook. Have some boundaries, people.
Where can you
talk
find
to her
me?
On the Facebook Reel It In page?
Yeah, talk to me on the page and Amway, right?
I mean, Amway. And also you can buy her autism Epsom salts, Epsom bath bombs. Autism bombs. Bomb that autism.
bomb.
And I want to thank our Patreon $50 business shout outs. Letty Molina, who's going to get you that CBD oil, even bacon flavor for the dogs.
Oh.
You knew that. If you
want
some CBD, go to HempWorks, HempWorks.com/L Molina. Do you want to talk about Sarah Dean?
I don't have my glasses on.
Okay. Well, sorry. Sarah Dean hosts the Shameless Mom Academy podcast where she's going to help you just get back into the swing of things after you have a baby.
Come on, people.
Learn to live again. ShamelessMom.com. Kate Marengo.
Kate Marengo.
That's our bitch who works at Interior Chicago.
I think she's at the hospital consulting with Lynette right now.
She probably is. Yeah. Yes, she's feng shuiing her hotel room. interiorchicago.com/interior-design to find Kate Marengo. Jeremy Bishop, he's with Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. He's the guy who finds you a realtor.
I love that. And it's free, right?
It's free. It's nationwide. You just call him or text him at 520-981-1305 and get his help. And then let's do one more. This one's more pressing. Ulysses wants to help out with Australia.
Ulysses.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's a good
the
one.
The wildlife in Australia is really taking the worst of it. And the koalas are they're endangered of being extinct. So WIRES, WIRES, is Australia's largest wildlife rescue organization. They're licensed by NSW, National Parks and Wildlife Service. And if you could donate just a little bit, if you were thinking about donating to the tragedy that's going on in Australia, you know, help the animals. Make sure that they get, help and saved. You can go to wires.org.au and then you can look for the donate to the emergency fund. Okay. So go to wires.org.au and click on the emergency fund donation button.
That's a good one. Thank you, Ulysses.
Also, one more thing. Later this week, we're going to drop an extra 10-minute partial episode of a new podcast from Podcast One that I think you guys are going to like. It's a true crime podcast. It's called First Degree. It features comedian Margaret Cho. I am dying. I'm going to be listening to this for sure. Margaret Cho is going to talk about a guy who worked on – Caitlin, do you remember the show? Was it American Girl?
I'm not sure.
The show she worked on, one of the producer of the show committed a murdered his wife.
Oh, wow.
And hid her like in his attic or something. I can't remember.
My God.
So listen to the episode. And Margaret Cho tells the story firsthand about finding out about her boss, one of her bosses, being a murderer.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called First Degree. Anyway, you're going to hear it in our – it's going to drop into your feed.
Oh, fun.
So, yeah. Okay, thanks for being here. Thank you, Kaylin. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Stephanie.
You're a parent now.
Don't F it up.